Welcome to Impact, the Conservation Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Heimbuch. And if you are a visual storyteller with a love for all things wild, then you're in the right place. From conservation to creativity, from business to marketing, and everything in between, this podcast is for you, the conservation visual storyteller who is ready to make an impact. Let's dive in. One of the things that we all crave as conservation photographers is community. Now, that might look like having a group of friends, fellow conservation photographers, who you can go out photographing with, or that you can get together and talk through ideas or projects or get advice from, maybe get some mentorship from as you swap strategies or ideas. But you might also crave having a more structured community, perhaps a collective, a group of conservation photographers who are working together to accomplish certain missions or to be able to contribute in a large-scale way, all working together as a cohesive unit. Well, if that's something that you're craving being part of, or perhaps starting in your area, then today's episode is going to be a goldmine of information for you. Today, our guest is Josh Deline here of the Canadian Conservation Photographers Collective. Josh is a founding member. He is one of the core people who helped create the Canadian Conservation Photographers Collective. And he's here today to talk not only about what CCPC is and how it got started, but also some of the lessons that he's learned, the strategies that they utilize to make this function and function well. He talks about what the collective's mission is, what it strives to accomplish, what its future looks like. And you are going to learn so much about what it may look like to be part of or run a collective in your own area. Or if you happen to be a Canadian, perhaps you'll want to take part in this particular collective. Without further ado, let's jump into this interview with Josh Deline here. All right. Welcome to this episode of Impact, the Conservation Photography Podcast. And I am really excited about this episode and our guest today because it's all about memberships and collectives and community building. And that's something that I find so, so critical in conservation photography. Mm-hmm. So Josh Deline here, welcome to the show.
Absolutely.
So for anyone who doesn't know you yet, I'm going to kind of let you sort of introduce yourself. I already have a bit of an intro in this episode, but I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself. For anyone who's never met you, who is Josh in the world?
So I'm a Canadian conservation photojournalist. I'm based in British Columbia on Vancouver Island. I've been a photographer a little more than 5 years, but I've been a conservationist really since I was a teenager, which is why I got into this genre. It was my passion for conservation that led me to photography rather than the other way around. You know, I saw it as an opportunity to really connect people with the issues that are going on around us. I thought it was a positive way to build that relationship. So I've been... this has really been an opportunity for me to, I guess, delve into that passion of mine.
Excellent. Yeah, it is really amazing that when you know that conservation is a realm that you want to focus in, how naturally photography can slide into that, that power of visual storytelling and knowing that images are so essential and the two are just hand in hand. It's amazing to me, though, that you've been really heavy into photography for 5 years, which ultimately is kind of a short amount of time. And looking at everything that you've accomplished in that short amount of time is really, really impressive. So are you just kind of going on all cylinders 24/7?
No, unfortunately. I work a full-time job. So really my opportunities to get out and photograph are evenings and weekends and when I'm able to book some dedicated time off to do it. That said, you know, I take every opportunity to not just focus on my own photography, but really I spend an inordinate amount of time on the collective, which is a passion project.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's jump into the Canadian Conservation Photographers Collective. What is this organization? Can you tell us kind of what it is and how it got started?
Absolutely. So We have 34 photographers, and I believe the number fluctuates, but I think we're around 10 or so volunteers that make up the collective. The collective officially launched in October of 2021, but we were working at it for a couple of years prior to that to prepare for that official launch. It started as a conversation on Instagram, curiously. So I threw out this idea that this would be something really interesting to start to connect conservation photographers in Canada together. And I got some responses. That was in 2019. Didn't pursue it at the time, but decided a year later to try it again. And that at that time, I thought, okay, we've got to follow through with this. So I started having conversations with Justin Tauss, who was one of the other founding members. And we started having emails and chats on Instagram. Then we started having phone calls. Justin came with a wealth of ideas. He'd clearly been thinking about this for a while and really had, you know, some great vision for it. So based on that, we decided to reach out to other people. We had about 5 photographers. We had some conversation amongst ourselves and said, all right, we need some more. We need more people to kind of kick this off. So we reached out to people that we knew or people that we were connected with on Instagram. That got us to about 19 photographers. So there were a few months of preparation in advance of our launch where we were building the website, defining our ethical guidelines, things like that, so that when we launched, we were prepared with that. You know, we had our Instagram account up and running and so on. Very quickly realized that photographers don't necessarily want to administer an organization. So we pivoted within a couple months where we started recruiting volunteers to really manage the aspects of, you know, the business, the management of this organization, which has been fantastic. We have an extraordinary group of volunteers, highly qualified, dedicated, passionate people that with skills in particular areas that we're lacking, which is invaluable. So I've been extremely grateful for their contributions and for what they do to keep this ship floating.
Absolutely. So what does the ship accomplish? What is it that you as a collective really get out there and do?
So our primary goal is education. That is at the core of what we're doing. But, you know, we have a bit of a mantra. It's educate, engage, and inspire. So we want to be able to inform people. B, we want to give people opportunities to engage in conservation subjects. And we want to inspire them to take meaningful action on their own. So that's really at the heart of what we are and what we're doing. The way that looks, so right now we have, obviously we post different subjects. Our social media team will glean from the accounts, the Instagram accounts of our photographers, pull various different images and content, sometimes supplement the content if it's lacking a little bit there, trying to, you know, boost it up so that there is that conservation focus. So that's, you know, a bit of the educational component. We've had, I think, 3 different webinars that we've hosted now.
Nice.
The first was by one of our members, Donna Fletichek, Dr. Fletichek, who did a presentation about gray owls. And it was really about, it was kind of a combination of things. It was how to go out and photograph great gray owls. So, you know, that's going to appeal, obviously, to photographers. But also about the ethics around it, you know, how to be respectful of great gray owls, how to approach them cautiously, when to know when to leave, those sorts of things, how to read the signs of an owl and know that, all right, it's becoming stressed or whatnot. So really approaching it from that direction as well. So combining that conservation aspect into it. We had another presentation by a photographer who did an extraordinary trip in the Alaskan Wildlife National Refuge. I'm not sure if I've got that in the right order there, but he was out photographing the porcupine caribou herd. Mm-hmm. And then the last one was actually really interesting. It was based on some conversations with some of the female photographers in our collective who were talking about some of the challenges and I guess, aspects of being a female conservation photographer. So we hosted a Female Lens on Photography, I think was the name of the webinar. And it was a discussion between one of our members, again, Dr. Filetichuk, and Jenny Wong, who's an extraordinary Canadian conservation photographer. So really talking about, like I say, that some of the challenges that they experience in the field, but also the unique perspectives that they bring to the genre. Just a well-balanced discussion, and it was a great success. So that's some of the things that we've been working on.
That's wonderful. I mean, I feel like what others receive from your collective is really clear and really exceptional. And I'm curious about what is it like to be a photographer as part of this collective? Is it something that anyone can reach out and request to be? What is the community situation like? What benefits are there for the photographers who are part of the collective?
So we have a recruitment process now in place. Each February, we let people know that we're going to be recruiting. We ask them to submit applications. You know, there's a form that helps give us a bit of information about who they are, what their interests are, what their experiences are, particularly, obviously, in photography and conservation. So those are the two key criteria that we look at when we're examining new candidates. We want to see exceptional photography skills, but we also want people who have a demonstrated, consistent history of promoting conservation. So that's not always the case in some of the applications that we receive. We might get exceptional photographers, but really haven't shown clearly what they've done to promote conservation and contribute to it, or vice versa. Sometimes we get strong conservationists, but their photography skills need some development. We now have a page on our website that helps define that more clearly so that there's that understanding up front, and we'll be directing people to that. So if there's any questions, you know, after the decisions have been made, we can say, all right, if you haven't had an opportunity, please do read this, because of course we can't release the contents of the discussion of the selection committee. That's that's amongst themselves. But you know, we do want people to have that clear understanding of what it is that we're looking for. So once we invite people into the collective, they have an opportunity to contribute in a number of different ways. That might be, you know, as I said, speaking on webinars, contributing basically their ideas overall into the direction that we want to be going in. And obviously, at the heart of it are the images and the video content and so on that they produce. We then utilize that in a number of different ways. So we've taken a couple different approaches. We are not yet incorporated as a nonprofit. That's one of our primary goals in the near future. But in order to reach that point, we're trying to generate income so that we can become financially sustainable. We want to be able to earn our income rather than relying heavily on donations and things like that. So a couple of things that we've been doing is we've developed a service package that we offer to organizations, which might be environmental, non-governmental organizations or NGOs, might be government agencies, might be First Nations, could be university departments, where we say, you know, we do our research, we find that they are engaged in some kinds of conservation projects, and then we approach them and say, if you're interested, for a fee, we can send our photographers out to document the work that you are doing, and then you can then use those images to promote your work, be it through whatever channels that they're utilizing. So that's one approach that we've taken. The other is that we're currently developing an online catalog of photographs of images that we can then license to similar organizations. So we would approach them and say, okay, we've got this bank of images. If you have an upcoming campaign or something of that nature where you could use these types of images for a fee, again, depending on the usage and the duration and so on, these images are going to be available.
Excellent. Well, so it seems like being part of CCPC is really amazing because you're getting extra opportunities to get out there and photograph, to work for clients, to license images that you may not otherwise have. I'm curious also about the community aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Do you get together and do meetings or networking, or what does that look like in terms of just really getting a chance to connect with other photographers and share stories from the field or swap experiences, that sort of thing?
That's one of the really great benefits of being part of this collective. So we have a monthly formal meeting where we talk about the activities that we're currently engaged in and the things that we're planning and so on. We also have a monthly meeting in the middle of the month that's just an informal discussion. And you know, it's kind of a drop-in meeting. You can show up for as long as you're available. And I actually find that the photographers are oftentimes more engaged in that meeting because it's such a great opportunity to ask those questions you might not get to otherwise, to learn about people's experiences. And we all have questions. You know, some of the photographers have experiences in a professional capacity, others don't. Some have worked on contracts, others haven't. It's really a great opportunity to communicate in that way, and it's certainly appreciated. Beyond that, we've gone out in small groups and shot together, which has been fantastic. So one of the conservation topics on the west coast of Canada, it's the herring spawn that occurs in the coastal waters of British Columbia. Years ago, there were 5 viable herring fisheries off the west coast. There's now just 1. So overfishing over time has decimated the herring population. So it's one of those subjects where we've taken an interest and it's an opportunity. It's an extraordinary event in itself. So just to be there and witness and capture is really a unique experience. When you see hundreds of thousands or millions of herring out in the water and they're spawning, the water turns this turquoise blue. It's extraordinary. And it draws all these different species to it, like sea lions, otters, seagulls, eagles. There are hundreds of eagles that converge in this area, you know, for this event. And of course, the fishing fleet. So we're there to capture the beauty, but also document the challenges that these species face. So in doing so, it's just this great time to get together, you know, work together. It's a learning experience. You're learning from each other. And there's, of course, the between shooting, there's fun, you know, of course, that goes on in the evenings. And so it's really enjoyable in that respect as well.
Wonderful. I feel really strongly that finding community, being part of a collective, an organization, can be really fulfilling, because I think a lot of times, especially in specifically conservation photography, it can be really tough, not only creatively difficult, but you're also dealing with these emotionally complex issues, lots of just struggles. I'm hearing a lot about having eco anxiety and compassion fatigue, you know, things like that are really coming up a lot. And so having a group of people that you can get creatively fired up and inspired by, actually hang out with, but then also talk the same language about what you're going through, what you're seeing, what you're emotionally struggling with, politically struggling with. I think that is huge. So have you seen in the people who have been part of the collective, either since the beginning or who have joined more recently, have you seen any kind of specific changes or benefits for them in their work in being able to have that community to rely on?
It's, you know, it's an intangible, so it's sometimes difficult to quantify, but I would say yes. I think, again, going back to those informal conversations that we have, whether it be in, you know, in the monthly meeting or when we get together, there's a lot of information sharing that goes on. People are learning valuable skills, I would say, sort of in a professional capacity, you know, a better understanding what it takes. Some people have really been able to create this career and others are aspiring to it. So from that perspective, I think it's been really advantageous. I think any time that you have conversations, you know, with regards to the conservation subjects and the more, I guess, emotional aspects of this, It's always a learning experience. You get these different perspectives. As I say, I've been passionate about conservation for years, but anytime I get to hear a different perspective that's informed and considered, it really helps me as an individual to grow as well. I don't necessarily always want to be in an echo chamber. Yeah, sure, we tend to think along the same lines, but I would say it's just great to learn from each other. And that happens not only in sort of those conservation aspects, but within the organization as well. People think of things that I don't, and vice versa, that I think really helps to expand our, I guess, concept of who we are and what we're doing. And I think it's really beneficial. So having this group of people to collaborate with is beneficial for everyone, I would say.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Okay. So I kind of want to return back to something that you mentioned earlier. I have a lot of listeners who are in different parts of the world. So even though there's definitely a lot of Canadian listeners who will probably be knocking on your door, for folks who are really interested in creating a collective where they are in whatever, you know, country or county or whatever it may be that they're in, you mentioned, you know, photographers aren't necessarily that interested in actually administering a community. There's a lot of work that goes into running a successful community, let alone if you're going to build that into a nonprofit or a collective that is working as a cohesive unit to accomplish certain goals. So that is difficult work. What are some of the things that it takes for you to run CCPC so successfully?
I think, first of all, you got to be passionate about what you're doing. There are always going to be challenges when you form a new group at, you know, at any point in the evolution of an organization. So having that passion to get through those difficult times is really helpful. I think it helps to do your research, be informed about what it means to be a nonprofit, what it means to work with a group of volunteers, because we're all volunteers. So there's no point at which I can turn around and say, you must do this. It's, could you please do this? You know, these are the deadlines that we're working within. If you have an opportunity, please contribute. Some people are able to, others aren't. And that really speaks as well to considering the size of your group, particularly one of this nature. The more people you have, the more that are able to contribute within the times that they're available. So if you've got, say, a group of 10, but only three are able to contribute images, you know, on a specific deadline, that really limits your ability to make a significant contribution or be effective in what it is that you're attempting to do at that time. We keep expanding. And as we do so, that gives us greater ability to provide the kinds of services that we're hoping to do. So that's important. I think good community building skills is helpful. I think you've got to consider the needs of everybody. Everyone's coming from different perspectives and everyone has different life circumstances that you have to factor into your decisions. You've got to be respectful. You have to be mindful. I think doing your research, you know, one of the things in advance of us incorporating as a nonprofit is really coming to a better understanding of what the requirements are going to be to take that next step in our evolution. So that's something that is currently underway and will continue and as we go through this. I think good leadership skills factor in as well, particularly in this case. You know, as I mentioned, we've got our team of volunteers and we've got our team of photographers. There's a little bit of overlap, but for the most part, they sort of operate independently. So you've got to put one hat on to work with your volunteers, and you've got to put another one on to communicate with your photographers. They have different needs that you've got to balance. So there's a lot to consider, but I would say don't ever let any of that stop you. We each have strengths and we each have areas that we need further development in. Play to your strengths and then take the time to try and develop in those areas where perhaps you're not as strong, or find people that help complement your strengths. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you have volunteers specifically to help with the administration side of things.
Yes.
And you mentioned the social media account. There's a website that needs constant attention, I'm sure. There's also the selection committee and everything that goes into that. Morgan Heim and I created her Wild Vision Initiative, which is a directory of female and women identifying photographers in conservation. We haven't been able to open up applications to that in like 2 years because we're so busy. And so to be able to just administer the sheer workload of opening up an application cycle is huge. Yeah. What are some of the things that through your experience with CCPC, and I should actually say this whole name for people who are listening. So the Canadian Conservation Photographers Collective, when you're thinking about everything that has to happen for that, How are you breaking up tasks and helping to get volunteers assigned to different roles to accomplish all of that?
We've been extremely fortunate. There's actually a website in Canada called goodwork.ca, and I would absolutely plug this because they've been invaluable in assisting us. Essentially, what it is that it is a central site for people who are looking for either careers or volunteer opportunities in organizations that are devoted to serving the community in whatever capacity that might be. And obviously, one portion of that is conservation. So we post roles on there. And in terms of determining what the needs are, really, it depends on what projects or activities that we're engaged in. Wherever we see a gap, where we see it's recognizing your own limitations in terms of time, but it's also skills as well. You know, I realize that I'm not a phenomenal marketer. I'm really not a good marketer at all. So I am grateful to have people on the team that can help assist in that respect. Part of this photo shelter library, in building that, we recognized a need to have someone with the skills to develop standards and conventions, things like that, that the photographers would follow. So we recruited a digital asset manager who's been just absolutely extraordinary in helping to build that out. We have a media relations team. We've just recruited two graphic designers. So these are all skill sets that, you know, I as a photographer don't necessarily have. They bring extraordinary skills, and we're just so deeply appreciative of that.
Wow. I have to just underscore again, you've been in photography for 5 years. Yes. You have built, or as part of a team, but you are one of the major co-founders of this organization. You have built a phenomenal organization that is growing in such a short amount of time. So tell me a little bit about who are you and what are these traits that allow you to create this? Because it's very, very inspiring to see not only like, oh, hey, I have a passion for photography and I want to go ahead and contribute in my own way, but hey, I'm going to take all of this energy and help bring people together around this collective mission that we have and help to enable people to do a better job at this and help create these opportunities for people and organizations and so much more. And so I'm just curious, what are some of the personality traits that you have that draw you into this and have helped you along the way? I mean, 5 years, that's a short amount of time.
I think it's important to note that, you know, my photography skills or lack thereof, I don't think really, I mean, it helped me to get my foot in the door more or less in this world, but you know, that's something I personally recognize that I need to continue to develop. And it helps to be surrounded by people with these extraordinary skills. So myself as a photographer, I recognize my junior status in this realm and that I need to keep working on that.
Okay. So humility, check.
Thank you. My life experience is vastly different though. I'm a bit of a jack of all trades. I've really been involved in a lot of different careers that developed skills that brought me to this point. I worked as a child care worker when I was in my early 20s. I was a paramedic for about 8 years. I've owned a couple different businesses. I'm currently a computer programmer. I work for a local health authority. I've been doing that for 15 years now. I was working as a consultant doing that particular work for healthcare organizations throughout North America. So, I mean, I get a little hung up sometimes when people talk about education being, you know, the end all be all. I certainly recognize its value and it helps to get you to a place more quickly, I think. But I don't discount experiences. And when someone tells me that they have a range of experiences, it's something I can relate to because, you know, I've done these different jobs. So, you know, as a paramedic, probably one of the most valuable skills that I learned from that was communication, learning how to communicate with people in times of extreme crisis. So helping to calm them down, those sorts of things. So you bring from all these different things, various different skill sets. When I was a teenager, as I mentioned, I actually formed the environmental club in my high school. So, you know, my passion drove me to do that. Many years later, in my 30s, I helped to form a group of activists in a community, Prince George, in the central interior of British Columbia, we were opposed to a project that had been proposed called the Enbridge Northern Gateway Project. And essentially what it was they were looking to ship bitumen from Northern Alberta to the west coast of British Columbia. And having lived in that area for most of my life, I recognized the environmental implications of it and really wanted to do something about that. So, you know, there was that aspect, but again, it was learning how to coordinate with a group of volunteers, how to manage, how to sometimes follow, whatever the case may be. So those, you know, all those different experiences kind of got me to where I am now. And, you know, I try to bring the best and sometimes the worst of that with me. But, and then again, it's learning how to collaborate with other people, learning to recognize their skills and strengths and really sort of drawing that out from people and applying that towards this common goal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have so many questions going on in my head right now. The first one that I want to address is where the challenges are, like hidden challenges, because you mentioned that you do need really strong leadership skills. And when you're creating a community like this, a collective or a membership that is volunteer-based, like you mentioned, it's not as if someone has an assignment and they're required to do that assignment and there's, you know, due dates and da da da. You're asking someone, can you please accomplish this? We have this shared mission and we really need this to happen. Is it possible? But sometimes people are going to say, nope, I don't have capacity, or deadlines pass, and so on and so forth. What are some of the big challenges or hurdles that you've experienced that you can say, hey, if you're someone who wants to build a conservation photography community or collective in your area, just be prepared for these things to pop up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is absolutely a component of what we do. It's something that we factor into any decisions, any commitments. And I think that's really important, because I think that if you make a commitment, say to another organization, that we're going to do this for you by this time, you really have to be prepared to follow through. So that means frequent reminders, having those conversations. I think imparting that sense of urgency sometimes, you know, having communication is really central, I guess, to all of this. That's probably, I guess, the core theme of this, is that making sure that you're constantly communicating with people so that everyone understands what their roles are in this and what the deadlines are, what the expectations are, but also accepting that sometimes it's not always going to work out the way that you wanted. Sometimes things will happen that are a great surprise and you're elated, but other times you don't quite get where you were hoping to, but that's just the nature of this. You know, as I said, having more people certainly helps us to be more effective. So that's something, you know, I am really looking forward to that continual growth. One of the key things, one of our key objectives is, and this relates to, I think, to conversations that you've had with other photographers as well, this idea of what it takes to make a living in this space. And really what we're trying to do is create that opportunity for our members. We want to create financial opportunities. So part of, you know, what we've talked about already, the services that we want, that we're providing, 60% of all profits, of net profits, go back to the photographers. So we want to make sure that they're reimbursed and compensated for their time and efforts and so on. And that would certainly be true going forward. We've talked about potentially venturing into some business areas that where we're able to apply our various skill sets. We have a lot of guides in our collective, people that are currently working all over the world in guiding. That might be something that we can explore as an organization. So again, that we can provide those opportunities to compensate the photographers for the time. Really, I want this to eventually be a way that photographers can, if not have a complete income, at least supplement what they're already doing. Mm-hmm.
That's huge. I think that is so, so fantastic, because there are so many things that you really need to do as a photographer to make an actual living. There's rarely just one thing. Yes. One revenue stream that you can rely on as a photographer. And so you need to have your fingers in many pies. Yeah. And so the idea that there's an organization that is actively trying to help photographers create a revenue stream by doing the passionate conservation photography they want to do anyway, that can often be difficult to find payment for. That is really exceptional. You also mentioned that you are pursuing nonprofit status, and I'm curious about what are some of the things that you all have had in conversations that are pros and cons for nonprofit status? Because I know that it's a pretty big decision to make. You go from sort of being an informal collective, kind of winging it on your own, to something much more formal. What makes you really want to pursue nonprofit status? And what are some of the, I guess, factors that went into that?
You know, as I say, I want us to be financially sustainable in our ability to stand up on our own. I mean, that's really kind of a core goal of this. That said, getting that nonprofit status really opens up doors to funding opportunities. We've looked into it. In fact, we recruited a volunteer quite early on to research those opportunities and then recognize that you have to have that nonprofit status in order to get there. We debated, I suppose, early about the options of either a social enterprise or a nonprofit. What I know of a social enterprise, I firmly believe in the concept. This idea of where a business exists solely for the benefit of society, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like, is that maybe the same as the U.S. version of a benefit corporation?
Could be. And again, I think it's just my lack of in-depth knowledge on that, but I suspect probably along the same lines.
Okay.
A nonprofit, I mean, eventually if we follow this through all the way and get to a point of a registered charity, we can then accept donations and provide income tax receipts, things like that. So, I mean, there's obvious benefits to people who want to donate to what we do, but I don't want to become dependent or addicted in a sense to donations. I really want us to stand on our own feet in this capacity. Government funding certainly would enable us to engage in larger scale projects that we believe would be valuable to conservation. So that's something that we want to pursue, absolutely.
Excellent. And so the nonprofit status is something that gives you access to all these funding opportunities that are only available to nonprofits. And then That way you can go for these large scale grants and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
Makes perfect sense. Okay. So that's really interesting. And I'm also curious, another thing that you had mentioned before is when you were really forming this and having all of the conversations about what you needed to have in place before you launched the collective as a whole, let alone moving forward into nonprofit status, you mentioned having ethical standards. Can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit more about what that is? Because you're right, as a collective, if you all are working either on independent different projects, but underneath the umbrella of a collective, you do want to have standards there because the photographers as part of the collective are representing it as a whole. So could you tell us more about what are those ethical standards? What are some of the things that went into that thought process? And how did you ultimately decide what got put in place?
Developing a strong set of ethics in conservation photography was really important to us for a couple different reasons, I would say. One, if we're going to be working in this space, it's really important that we're respecting the subjects that we're photographing. It's part of our core values. So making sure that we clearly define for ourselves, for new members coming into the collective, what that meant, you know, getting them to make that commitment to ensuring that they're practicing those standards when they're out in the field. The other thing is too, when we talk about offering services to other organizations, we also want to be able to tell them that we adhere to these standards. So when we are working with you in the field, you can be assured that our photographers will maintain these. It's important when you're working, say, with like scientific researchers, you know, if you've formed a relationship with the university department, then they have a team of researchers in the field. You're sending photographers out there. You do not want to do anything that impedes the work that they're doing or the wildlife in the area or the natural environment, things like that. So it's really important for us. And it's also something I think that we want to help promote. What I've seen just in my short time of being a photographer are some of those bad practices just amongst the public when I'm out. You know, I try to shoot alone as much as possible there, but there are times when you encounter groups of people and so on, and you see some of the things that happen. And that said, I mean, from my own experience, I've also evolved. You know, there were things I did early on that I now recognize, oh, that was a mistake. I really shouldn't have taken that approach. So we don't want to shame people per se. We want to inform, help guide that development amongst other photographers. And I think that's really important. And I've seen locally that shift, people becoming more aware, everything from the just noise in proximity to an animal, you know, being aware that of the stress that can cause and those sorts of things. So it's an ever evolving process. So we defined that set of ethics. In fact, one of our photographers, going back to Justin again, who has dual degrees in journalism and education, he put that together. He did some research. He looked at what other organizations were doing, and he came up with an exceptional list. As the photographers gathered, reviewed, vetted what he had done, and then that's what you see is what we came up with. But that said, it's a living, breathing document. It's something that will change over time as new information comes out. You know, we become better informed. And that's really what I think it's all about, is sort of best practices based on the information that you have at the time.
Mm-hmm. What I love about your code of ethics, and I'm going to link to this in the show notes as well, because I think that it's really important for photographers to have access to different codes of ethics that they can mm-hmm. review and see different perspectives. What I love about your code of ethics is that ultimately it is quite simple. It is quite straightforward. And I've seen some other groups kind of just really go whole hog on this. And so it becomes this scary Bible that yep. you feel like you're just terrified to feel like, oh my God, there's so many rules to follow. And I don't, and there's so much gray area as well when you are actually out in the field that you have to judge situation by situation. How am I behaving in this situation? You need to read what's going on and what ethics you ultimately follow. There's no really hard and fast rules for the most part, but there are some very clear lines that you want to follow. And I feel like your code of ethics has those very clear lines that you can then use as your touchstone while you're out in the field. So you have four core sections. One is, I know that I'm dictating this back to you, but I happen to have the page up in front of me. So you say our subjects come first, mm-hmm. and then you have bullet points under that for really digging into what that means. But ultimately, our subjects come first, leaving as little a footprint as possible, respecting others, and post-processing images and disseminating written information. Like, those are sort of these like four core values that you can have. And yes, there's bullet points under that that really give some extra clarity, but even those stay very straightforward. Yes. And I really respect the code of ethics that you came up with, because it allows for, here's our hard and fast rules for the most part. Like, these are the core things that you can use as a touchstone, but then you're using your own personal ethical standards and guidelines that allow you to feel like you've got some freedom inside those gray areas, which is a pretty big deal.
Yes, absolutely. Well spoken. I couldn't say any better. I don't have anything to add to that, really.
You're like, I already had that conversation a long time ago. That's why it's up on the website. Good job for just completely parroting that. But yes, I really like this. So I'm going to link to this in the show notes as well, because I was working on a kind of an ethical guideline as well for another project that I was working on. And as I started to do research and get into it, I was like, oh yeah, we should really mention that. But then, oh, there's this, but then, oh man. And all of a sudden it was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so you have to really come back to those core things. How is it that we should be behaving in the yep. field, period? Absolutely. So you mentioned that you built this in one way by having a volunteer really help to research and draft something, but then everybody in the collective ultimately agrees yes. with this. So one last question that I have for you about really running a successful collective is, when you come back together to ultimately decide on something that can be as maybe controversial or sticky as something like a code of ethics, you know, mm-hmm. some people may feel more strongly about one thing than another person may feel, or, you know, it can take a while to come to conclusions about things. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like running an organization or a collective, a community, and having those conversations and trying to make sure, because conversations, like you said, communication is critical. And so when you're having these pretty important in-depth conversations, what is it like managing those, making sure that people feel heard, ultimately coming up with decisions so that you can move forward instead of perpetually staying in a discussion? What's that like?
I think my role in those situations is a facilitator. Obviously, I have my own beliefs, and I will always stand up for conservation as I believe it. My values guide my life. But in these conversations, I see myself as a facilitator. So giving everyone the opportunity to speak, transitioning, you know, from one comment to another, those sorts of things, you want to keep the conversation flowing. But yeah, really taking in all those perspectives. And sometimes what it comes down to is a democratic vote. We have voted on a number of different subjects. And I think it's important because I think if you don't have the backing of your members, then you can end up going in the wrong direction. I could have an idea that I think is just absolutely amazing, and I take it off in a particular direction. But if no one's interested in doing it, it's not going to be successful. You know, it ultimately has to be supported by the majority of your photographers. But I think also, I think it's important to be respectful of people's, you know, different opinions. And even if we decide to go in a particular direction, that just being aware that other people may not agree with that and being mindful of that sort of in your decisions in the future.
Excellent. So for any of our Canadian listeners who are really stoked and are interested in being part of the Canadian Conservation Photographers Collective, how do they get involved? How do they maybe apply? When does that happen? And tell us a little bit more about how specifically people can get involved in CCPC.
There's a few different ways. So the first one, probably the most easy, is tagging Share CCPC in their Instagram posts. So we have our social media team that reviews those. Once a week, we'll share an image from one of our followers. So there's that ongoing contribution that people are able to make. And of course, it helps to raise their visibility online and so on. Second way is that there's actually a page on our website where people can contribute images. So if we're engaged in a campaign, which we're about to launch, for example, people can upload images to the site. And if we decide that we're going to use them, their name would be noted in whatever materials that we produce. So again, they're able to contribute towards that conservation goal. And then the third, in that sense, would be applying to the collective. So again, each February 15th is the cutoff when we say, okay, no more applications for this year. We then it usually takes about a week or two to go through the different applications. Our selection committee meets, reviews each application based on those key criteria that we discussed, and then make the decision to accept. There have been, as I mentioned, the opportunities to participate in webinars. And part of the great aspect of the webinar is at the end, we do the question and answer. So you have an opportunity to really communicate directly with the host speakers there. So you have a chance to ask questions and provide comments and feedback. Those are exciting chances for us to connect with the people that support us or just interested in what we're doing.
Oh, that sounds so exciting. I always love events like that, live events where you really get to talk with all of the people that are there, because it's amazing the questions that pop up or the thoughts that pop up, and it sparks all kinds of new ideas. So I love that you all are holding those webinars. That's fantastic. Wonderful. Well, I am going to link to everything in the show notes. So listeners, wherever you are listening, you can scroll down and see a link to the show notes and be able to get access to everything that we've been talking about. Josh, thank you so much for not only being here today on the podcast, but for everything that you are doing behind this collective. It's a very big deal to run something like this so successfully and to create a resource that's not only an incredible resource for conservation efforts through photography, but for conservation photographers themselves. It's no small thing. So thank you so, so very much for all of the work that you and everyone put into running CCPC.
Thank you so much, Jamie. Thank you for the work that you do. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and to your audience today. Very, very appreciative of this.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again. And everyone, we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you so much for listening to the very end of this episode. And I want to give you a reward for the attention and the dedication that you just showed. I have made something extra special for you. It is a 45-second quiz that reveals your unique personality as a visual storyteller. See, as photographers and filmmakers, we all have our own unique creative strengths as well as some weaknesses to be aware of. And this quiz will not only reveal your creative super strengths, but also provide you with a customized action plan to put those strengths into action. You can head to jamieh.com/quiz to find out your unique storyteller personality. That's jamieh.com/quiz. I hope that you have so much fun learning about the unique personality that you bring to your storytelling.